From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us, followed by Conversations with Cheryl. Here's what's happening. For every COVID-19 case reported, 10 additional infections likely went unannounced, according to the best estimates from the CDC. In a call with reporters, the CDC director, Dr. Robert Redfield, said, in the past, we didn't really aggressively pursue diagnostics in young asymptomatic individuals. Asymptomatic COVID-19 individuals are of great concern to public health officials and lawmakers due to their ability to spread the virus without even knowing that they're sick themselves. Though younger asymptomatic individuals are at lower risk of complications and death from COVID-19, they still pose a risk of unwittingly transmitting the virus to elderly people, to those with underlying medical conditions. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention appears to have recently added three more symptoms of the coronavirus to its ongoing list. They are congestion or runny nose, nausea, or gastrointestinal issues. Joining the federal agency's list that already includes fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, fatigue, muscle or body aches, headache, loss of smell, or sore throat. Sounds like the real flu, doesn't it? Republicans are slamming Joe Biden after the presumptive Democratic nominee made a verbal gaffe during a campaign stop in Pennsylvania and said that 120 million people had died from the coronavirus. Well, he meant to say 120,000 people. That's quite a difference. Anyway, let's check in with our expert on pandemics, Dr. Gary Ridenour. Gary, give us an update on your situation. It seems like most states are reporting an increase. What the heck's going on here?
Well, I looked today at 15 states that are yelling of increases. And I found that 12 of the 15 states that are yelling are Democratic states. And our problem is the cases of reporting is a hodgepodge of criteria. And so states just kind of whip out whatever they want. And they have criteria like a confirmed case, yeah, positive PCR test, and they're sick. Probables, meets clinical criteria and epidemiological evidence, and no positive lab. Thank you. Next one, meeting presumptive lab evidence and or clinical criteria and epidemiological evidence. Great. Last one is a death certificate where there's no positive lab, but the doctor wrote on a death certificate coronavirus. Those are all being lumped up as cases.
Why does it seem, though, that the United States is getting higher cases than the rest of the planet?
Well, there's a lot of money out there that these states and CDC want to get hold of to dispense. I mean, I know of a hospital that took their parking garage and put it into a three-story clinical rooms in case of the coronavirus and raked in millions of dollars, and it sits
Jeez.
Empty.
Are you saying these numbers are inflated, Gary?
They're inflated. I think that when you look at everything here and that maybe 75% of the numbers that are being thrown out right now are not true. This is 1984 all over again with the doublespeak, you know. Oh, we're fine. No, we're not.
All right, we'll check in with you next week, my friend. Jobless claims totaled 1.48 million last week as unemployment related to the coronavirus pandemic remained very high, though those receiving benefits fell below 20 million for the first time in 2 months, according to the government. As we've been reporting, lawmakers on the Senate Intelligence Committee have voted to require intelligence agencies and the Pentagon to provide an unclassified report to Congress on unidentified aerial phenomena. It's an amazing story. Another amazing story, of course, is Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Well, good evening, George. I'm delighted to be able to report that just this afternoon, after weeks of delays and falling behind the torrent of incoming UFO reports, I finally managed to catch up today with the accumulated reports and update the UFO Center website with the posting of almost 1,900 of the most recent reports, George. And a few of those I'll talk about in a moment. However, before I go into those reports, I'd like to tag on to my last week's report another sighting incident from the distant past that I find so intriguing that I'd hope to include it in that report last week. I suspect that members of the Coast audience recall that my UFO update last week focused on a possible UFO-related incident that was reported by Governor John Winthrop, first governor, I believe, of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which, according to Governor Winthrop's diaries and notes, appears to have occurred near present-day Boston in the year 1639. The incident appears to have included possible abduction of three men in a boat. Well, I got so wrapped up in that report, George, that I ran short of time and didn't have time to present another outstanding past sighting case, this one from the year 1925, 95 years ago, near the city of Casper, Wyoming, which involved a schoolhouse full of pupils, most or perhaps all of whom apparently witnessed a very strange object hover near their school and then suddenly streak off in the daytime sky. The incident, of course, sounds somewhat reminiscent of the so-called aerial school sighting from Zimbabwe, Africa, in September of 1994 that has been so nicely covered by Coast. The Wyoming sighting, however, involved the mother of a woman who I believe is a regular Coast listener, George, and the incident apparently was so dramatic and so well documented by eyewitnesses at the time that the story made its way into the, at least one and perhaps several of the local Wyoming newspapers. If we have any listeners tonight from near Casper, Wyoming, who enjoy ferreting out stories from a newspaper morgue, please ask them to send me an email and we can communicate. Well, now finally touching on more recent cases, I'd like to focus on the state of South Carolina, which I've mentioned so many times on Coast. Something is taking place there. Four reports briefly, just summarized. On Wednesday, the 17th of June, just last week, a woman reports she saw a very strange red fireball that apparently came out of the water, or appeared to, and hovered for several seconds. I don't know the exact duration. 2 hours later, a gentleman reports something very similar, four lights coming on at a time, sequentially, maybe 15 seconds along, each one of them. And two more reports that I think I'll just skip over, but just briefly, one of them has a father and son reporting that an object appeared, it split into two, the second object split again, making three, and one of the daughter products split again, making four objects that hovered for almost a minute above the water. I hope that somebody in South Carolina is picking up on this and will do a newspaper article and maybe an investigation. But that's how the world looks from my seat, George, and I'm delighted to be able to share these incidents with the Coast audience.
They keep coming in, Peter. Peter's website, UFOCenter.com. If you see something, go to that website. A Minneapolis neighborhood that pledged not to call the police in the wake of the death of George Floyd is now dealing with a 300-strong homeless encampment in a local park. Traffic has reportedly increased in the neighborhood around Powderhorn Park as drug dealers seek to meet their clientele displaced during the civil unrest, the rioting, the looting following Floyd's death at the end of May. Residents have agreed to check their privilege and protect people of color by not involving law enforcement to report the instances of property damage out there. Sadly, the trend of fatal police shootings in the United States seems to be only increasing, with a total of 430 civilians having been shot, 89 of whom were black as of June 15th of this year. In 2018, there were 996 fatal police shootings. In 2019, this figure increased to 1,004. Additionally, the rate of fatal police shootings among black Americans was much higher than that for any other ethnicity, standing at 30 fatal shootings per million of the population as of June 20th of 2020. Now, we're going to get involved in a moment with some special people who are experts in police training. Ron Barber, of course, I'll introduce him in a second, along with, of course, Randy Sutton, a former police officer. We'll be joined later on by another officer, and we'll take your calls next hour. This is a very important couple hours coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me say this at the outset. We have a lot of police officers who listen to this program, and we have the utmost respect for our law enforcement, for our first responders and police officers as well. That being said, there's something wrong. There's some problems out there. You know what they are. And so we brought in some experts to talk about it for the next couple hours. First, let me introduce Ron Barber. Ron has been with us before. He's a former radio and television newscaster from St. Louis. For the last 35-plus years, he has produced nationally acclaimed video and online training for first responders. His initial company, American Heat, and now In the Line of Duty, are used by thousands of police officers, firefighters, EMTs for continued training and education. Let's bring Ron in. Ron, welcome to the program, sir.
George, good evening and belated happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend.
How many were on the cake this year?
There were too many. Too many, my friend. I should say Ron and I go back, folks, 100 years. So we're all time friends from St. Louis. Let's bring in Randy Sutton. Randy's a retired lieutenant with the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. Has 33 years of law enforcement background. He is one of the most decorated officers in the history of that department, having been in a number of harrowing incidents, many of which are featured in his books, which include True Blue and A Cop's Life. He has appeared and featured on the TV show Cops for more than any other officer. That program, of course, has been discontinued based on the situations that have been happening. In the last year plus, he has founded the WoundedBlue.org website that provides counseling and guidance and support for officers who have been wounded on the outside and the inside. Now, he's joining us from his home quarantine, having been diagnosed recently with coronavirus. Randy, I trust you're okay.
I am indeed, and thank you for having me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Ron, let us begin, if we can, with the tragedy of the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis. You have seen the video and have probably analyzed it better than anybody. Your reaction to that?
Well, I wouldn't say better than anybody, George, but I have seen it. I have seen all of the available video, as has Sutton. We have rooted it back and forth, and I didn't know whether you knew it, George, but today is the 1 month anniversary of the death of Mr. Floyd.
Yeah.
Today, In the Line of Duty is making our 45-minute program, Death of George Floyd, the response that might have been available to all law enforcement. So give me just a sec here, George. It is online right now at lineofduty.com, and I am urging all law enforcement to exhort your chiefs, sheriffs, commanders, training officers, please get this program. I believe it will save lives in the future, it will save careers in the future, and it will save heartbreak in the future. It has vital information from three of America's great veteran cops, including Mr. Sutton. Randy, you saw it. You participated. I'm going to let you take the floor first.
Randy, your thoughts on this entire episode with George Floyd, and then I've got to ask you both. The police officer knew him. They worked together at a nightclub and restaurant doing security. But, Randy, you've trained police officers. You've seen incidents. You've been in incidents yourself. Even though Mr. Floyd broke the law, it does not initiate his death and the excuse for what happened. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely. I watched this horrific video. Excuse me, the video that was taken of his last breaths, and I watched horrified. There is absolutely no doubt that there were serious issues here. But the reality is that the officer who was the most involved in this, as well as the other officers, have been terminated and are facing trial. That is called accountability, and that's what everybody is calling for. So the fact of the matter is that the accountability is happening.
What would possess an officer, Randy, to do what he did with this poor guy on the ground screaming, "I can't breathe"?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know. You know, as a law enforcement trainer myself, and as someone who has been in situations involving combative suspects, I'm not going to make any excuses. There are no excuses to be made. All right. Now that you know this tragedy has happened, law enforcement has to look at this and say, okay, how can we do better? But remember this. That this is an aberration. What took place here is not something that is a commonplace type of incident. That out of all the millions of law enforcement contacts with people from all walks of life, this was a one-off. This is something that happens every once in a while, and so when it does, it has to be investigated and has to be looked at with all of the eyes on it, and then a determination made, okay, what happened here? How did this happen? And how can we make sure this doesn't happen again?
George, can I chime in?
Sure. Go ahead, Bernie.
You know, I think that, first of all, and I've got to make this point, I am saying that the death of Mr. Floyd, and I'm sure Randy will agree, will become required police academy training and quite possibly a full-blown mandatory course for cops, just like firearms training, ground fighting, ethics, and it will have an ultimate life of its own. And in my humble opinion, George, it is going to result in changes to policing that are still not known. And more than that, this single incident, George, Randy, I think is going to become a part of United States history because it has branded itself onto the American psyche in so very many ways. There truly isn't a part, now think about it, of our national life that hasn't already been or will be impacted by this single event. Who hasn't heard of George Floyd? Who hasn't been affected by his death in some way? Now, who could have thought, as Randy said, George, in the massive number of police-related incidents, and can you imagine how many thousands and thousands of hours of body cams are recorded every single day, most of them handled professionally and with the utmost decency by our wonderful law enforcement officers, that this incident, just as we're seeing the light at the end of the coronavirus tunnel, would dovetail so perfectly and evilly onto the scene. Now, keep in mind, you've got Derek Chauvin, a 19-year veteran who had to see multiple cell phone cameras pointed in his direction,
yep,
heard bystanders exhorting him to get off, he's not breathing, and twice he had to hear Mr. Floyd calling for his mother. But think about this and visualize in your mind's eye the video. Derek Chauvin's expression never changed. It was stoic, expressionless, not a single nod in response to the bystanders. And notice, there didn't seem to be one single word exchanged for 9 minutes between Chauvin and George Floyd during these 9 minutes. Now, what in God's name overcame Derek Chauvin?
Ronnie, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with Sergeant Mark DeBono, who will join us. And Randy, you will join us next hour with phone calls with Ron Barber. We are back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we will be back in a moment with Ron Barber from In the Line of Duty and Sergeant Mark DeBona as we talk about this police episodes that have been happening around the country. Next hour, we will take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're back with Ron Barber, his website, lineofduty.com. He trains police and law enforcement all around the country. We're going to bring in Sergeant Mark DeBona in just a second. Ron, the other episode that occurred not too long ago, the Atlanta episode with the fatal shooting of Rayshard Brooks. Now, in this particular case, this individual, you know, lunged for the police officer's taser, grabbed it, fired it off, and then got shot in the back running. Again, a homicide not justified by any means, but I've gotten so many emails, Ron, from people who say, why don't these people just stop resisting arrest? So how do we handle that?
Well, let's boil it down to the basics. Have you ever been stopped for anything, George?
I've been stopped for some, speeding and things like that over the years.
Oh, sure. And most of us have been stopped. Now, among those in your listening audience, let me ask you, how many of you who have been stopped for whatever reason proceeded to run from the officer who had stopped you?
I haven't, that's for sure.
And the simple fact of the matter is, an infinitesimal number of people have ever run from cops. But here's one thing that I will tell you, that of those who run from cops, the reason is not because they are scared of the police. The reason is why, George? The reason is because they're wanted for something.
For something.
They are wanted for something. And so the officer who has to pursue the running suspect knows two things. Number one, he's wanted for something. And number two, he knows, the cop knows, that he doesn't know exactly why the subject is running. It could be for a little bit of weed, or it could be he's just murdered two convenience store clerks at the Circle K. So the officer doesn't know. That's immediately going to put the officer's antenna at high alert. Now, I can tell you for a fact that I have seen stories in which officers' tasers have been wrested from them in brutal ground fights, and the officers have been tased. I remember one, it's been a couple of years, in which an officer was subsequently shot. Now, if you've ever been tased, you will never forget it. I was tased once, and I went down like a bolt. You are down and out for 5, 6, 7 seconds.
And it's withering pain, isn't it?
Oh, it is all over the bod. And it dissipates quickly. But that is the period of time in which an officer is able to do his or her thing, and that's hopefully handcuff the subject. Now, if that man, Mr. Brooks, running, had turned and the officer was within 25 feet and Mr. Brooks had hit the officer, that cop would have gone down.
Yep.
Like a horse shot between the eyes. Believe me, he'd have been down and Mr. Brooks could have done what? He could have accessed that officer's gun and shot and killed him. I think the charges against this Atlanta cop are absolutely insane. And in my opinion, I've been doing this a long time, they will be dropped.
But you do believe the George Floyd episode and Officer Chauvin, that's a different case.
Here's something I'd like to say as quickly as I can, because I want DeBona to get some time.
Yeah.
George, I've spoken to cops whose total accumulated years of service probably is close to 200, and not one of them told me that he or she had ever seen anything like the horror George Floyd experienced. Now, What happened to the man? Was it a power play? Was he showing off for the younger, far less experienced officers, two of whom, George, were rookies with 4 days on the job?
Right.
Had there been some sort of prior bad blood between the two men who worked security at the same nightclub? Had Mr. Floyd acted so violently during the arrest process that Officer Chauvin thought he'd teach him some maniacal lesson? Had Derek Chauvin been dealing with mental health issues utterly undetected? Or, listen to this now, since at the time of that incident, 1 month ago, Minneapolis police policy allowed officers to implement arms and legs on subjects' necks to contain them. And last I recollected, George, the knee is part of the leg. Had Officer Chauvin seemed so nonchalant because he had used that technique before? After all, now listen to this, officers in Minneapolis had rendered 44 subjects unconscious in 237 incidents where the neck restraint technique had been used from 2015. None had died, and they just banned it on June 8th this year.
Let's bring in Sergeant Mark DeBona. Sergeant Mark was with us about a year ago, retired from the Seminole County, Florida Sheriff's Department. He served 33 years on the job as a patrol sergeant and field training officer, specializing in traffic and DUI arrests. He has also been a police academy instructor, public information officer, street crimes investigator, honored twice with awards from MAD for the most DUI arrests. He spent 2 weeks at Ground Zero after 9/11, assisting the New York Police Department with patrol, as a nationally recognized expert on police suicides and the suicide rate among first responders, having himself overcome suicidal and depression issues. Mark, welcome back, my friend. Thank you.
Hi, George. And hi, Ron. It's great to be back. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, good to hear you, Mark.
Mark, I want to get into the situation in Minneapolis, but very quickly, I understand that the New York Police Department still continues to have high suicide rates among police officers. Is that unusually high based on the national average?
Well, you got to look at it one way. Is NYPD is the biggest department in the country, so obviously rates are going to be high on everything that goes on in that agency. Now, from what present climate right now, I can see the mental health illness going up in law enforcement, absolutely, because the officers I've spoke to, they are active. A lot of them they're very frustrated with lack of support from their agencies, and honestly, the lack of support from the public. So that is going to cause a mental health issue for officers, absolutely.
Do we have a justified protesting situation here in the George Floyd case? When you see so many people out there just ticked off over the way this was handled, they have a point.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. People have a right to assemble. People have a right to speak their opinion, and they have a right to protest. And I have no issue with that whatsoever. But when it turns to violence and turns to destruction, that's where it takes the bad turn.
I agree.
And there's nothing wrong with speaking up for something you believe in. When I saw the video, the George Floyd video, I was appalled just like everybody else was. I had to actually rewind on my TV to watch it again, and I was so appalled by that and the actions that happened. And I thought as an officer, then I thought as a civilian or retired, and it's just appalling. And I have no problem with somebody speaking up and saying this is wrong. But again, when we start looting, we start violence, stealing, that's not the answer. The answer is coming together, build bridges, the community and law enforcement coming together. Don't be part of the problem, be part of the solution.
Mark, let me ask you this. If you and I worked together somewhere in a security outfit at a nightclub, we knew each other, and then all of a sudden you're trying to arrest me for passing along some phony $20 bills, you're not going to put a neck restraint on me like that with a knee. There's something else going on here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we don't know what happened before the video, but here's the thing. if you know the person that you're having the encounter with, use that to your advantage. The one way or another, you know them from one way or another. So you use your verbal skills. You use, let's talk about this. This is what's going on. You know, this is why I'm here. And let's get a resolution of the situation. But when I see the knee on the neck, which I've never done in my career, it's appalling. It truly is. It went from a $20 counterfeit money to somebody dying.
And yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, if I were the officer and knew Floyd and we knew each other, I would have said, George, call me. I'll give you the 20. I'll help you out. You don't have to do something like that. I mean, that's why this is so bizarre.
It truly is. It truly is. And what's even more bizarre, George, is the body cam video has not been released.
Right.
And that just leaves an array of questions of is there something on the video that's that appalling? Is there something that's going left, going right? We don't know. And, you know, the cameras don't lie. That's the bottom line.
Wasn't the video in the Atlanta case with the Rayshard Brooks, wasn't that released relatively quickly?
No, the next day. I'm sorry, Ron. That's probably one of the most quickest videos I've seen released in my career, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. They weren't hiding anything.
No, they're very transparent, very, very transparent.
Well, and that's ever since Ferguson, Mark. That's been happening more and more as departments try to get their arms wrapped around the narrative as quickly as they can. You know as well as I that if there'd been a body cam on Officer Wilson that showed Michael Brown charging at him like a rampaging bull and trying to get his gun, that the St. Louis County Police would have released that footage the next day.
Absolutely.
Oh, no doubt. And when the body cameras first came out, to be honest with you, it was a tough sell to the older cops. And what I mean by that is, you know, why am I being recorded? I don't do anything wrong or anything like that. My answer back to the body cams and to the in-car cameras is this: if you're doing nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about. And it can save you just as much as it can hurt you, and obviously in the Floyd incident. But again, the cameras don't lie, and they answer a lot of questions that we just don't know in the Floyd case. That's why I'm so curious about the body cam.
It's unreal, George, that it's been a month and no body cam. Mark, don't you think it's going to be one of two things? That body cam is going to show George Floyd violently resisting or being completely and utterly cooperative.
One or the other. There's going to be no in-between here.
That's my take. And either way, it's going to create further unrest.
I think so, too. And Mark, doesn't this series of episodes that have occurred make life even more difficult for a police officer who now has to question what he or she is going to be doing, especially if they have to pull a gun on someone? It might cost that officer their own life, won't it?
Absolutely. And cops are leaving left and right. They're leaving their agencies. Enrollment right now for police academies is down 16%.
Wow, that's huge.
Last year. That's huge. And when an officer stops somebody, you have no idea who's in that vehicle. But the point is this. Now, the police still have to do their job. If somebody gets robbed, you have to respond to that. Your job is to arrest the person that robbed the other person. Your job is to answer the 911 calls. So, but with the climate that we're in right now, I can understand why officers are, for lack of a better word, they're hands off, and they're taking a step back, which could obviously cause damage to themselves or to a person or to property, and it's scary. I really truly feel for the active officers right now.
Ron, I was talking to an officer in a St. Louis suburb who said that his department had all been ordered to get body cams for every officer. I assume this is going to happen all over the country. What do you think?
Well, I don't think that there's any doubt, and you're going to see body cams on departments large and small. It's going to be good news if you happen to be a stockholder in Taser Axon, but to me, and something else I wanted to mention and ask you, Mark, how is it possible that none of the four responding officers in Minneapolis on the Floyd incident had tasers. I mean, to me, a large department like that, one zap of the taser, and Mr. Floyd, in my humble opinion, would have been extremely cooperative.
Well, I will tell you this, Ron. I have been tased 5 times, and this may sound kind of strange when I say this. I volunteered to be tasered, and what I mean by that is with the prongs, and I can tell you, in that 5 seconds, it's 5 seconds of hell. The pain is unbearable, the muscle tension, the cramp, everything like that, and it'll put you down. So why wasn't the taser used, or why didn't Minneapolis have one at that time? I can't give you that answer. I have no idea.
Why did you go through this, Mark, 5 times?
Well, here's why. In the situation, it's kind of like the Atlanta situation. I felt that if I get the taser put on me, I can explain to the public, I can explain to the jury, I can explain to my bosses what it's like to be laying on the ground and you have no control of your body. And I not that I wanted that to happen by any means, but I wanted to have firsthand experience of the taser. And then I that was 2 or 3 times, and then a couple times in training they asked for volunteers, and I'm like, I'll do it. And a couple of cops thought I was crazy for doing it. But I explained why, they're like, okay, we get that. So if it ever happened in my career, again, I want to be able to explain what the effects of the taser was personally.
Mark's website is bluehelp.org, bluehelp.org. Mark, thank you for being on the program. We appreciate it. We're going to come back in just a moment and take phone calls with Ron Barber from lineofduty.com and, of course, Randy Sutton, the officer from the Las Vegas Police Department, retired now, will be joining us to take calls as well as we talk about the cases of police shootings happening around the country, and we'll get your reaction to that as well. Calls are rolling in as we speak, so we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.